This is an MUT Radio podcast.
A warm welcome to Dr. Amaleo Gonyas-Malka, who will be discussing equality gains and lessons learned from women leaders across the globe. She will be looking also at persistent gender gaps and inequalities with a view to driving change and reform on both a micro and macro level. For those of you who don't know me, I am Dr. Naidu. I am the Director of Student Counseling. It's a unit in Student Affairs, and I've been given the privilege of welcoming and chairing the session that is going to be facilitated by Dr. Amaleo. We're hoping that it's going to be productive and informative, and we will be encouraging you to make note of any comments or questions that you might have, so that after Dr. Amaleo's presentation, we will be taking some questions and comments from the floor. The topic for today is both appropriate and timely. If we consider that we've recently celebrated International Women's Day on the 8th of March, where the focal point was on women's rights, the women's rights movement, bringing attention to issues of gender inequality, lack of reproductive rights, violence and abuse against women. We also recently commemorated Human Rights Day on the 21st of March, a day that honors the basic human rights of every person on the basis of their identity as human beings. We are also encouraged through these commemorations to reflect more deeply, not only on the inherent human rights of all people, but the extent to which these rights are indeed protected and upheld by government, business, and civil society. Women have been at the core of championing and advocating for human rights. It's a position, if you consider, that is both fitting and appropriate, given the innate childbearing and nurturing abilities of women. In bearing children and raising them, women not only birth individuals, but also communities and nations. Women have and continue to be at the forefront of challenging oppression, injustices, and inequalities, and advancing the cause for a just and fair society. There are numerous women leaders who have been at the forefront of breaking gender barriers, stereotypes, and challenging oppressive systems. These include, but are not limited to, French fashion designer Coco Chanel, who is credited with modernizing and reinventing women's fashion. Miriam Makeba was a South African singer, songwriter, and anti-apartheid activist. Malala Yousafzai, who is the youngest Nobel Prize winner, who overcame an assassination attempt by the Taliban in occupied Pakistan when she was only 15. She went on to campaign for women's rights and children's rights to an education. Other notable names include Professor Thuli Madonsela, who was the public protector from 2009 to 2016 and has been a lifelong activist, championing social justice, rule of law, and good governance. Also, Major Mandisa Nomteba Mfeka, who is blazing a new path for women and girls as the first Black woman to be a South African combat fighter pilot major. These are a few examples that illustrate the power which women possess to shape and change the world in progressive, socially responsive, fair and just ways. Ironically, though, the very people who birth humanity and are responsible for caring for them are the ones whose human rights are often undermined, diminished, and negated in both the public and the private sphere, at home and in the workplace. In order for any meaningful change to take place in society, we need to have honest, challenging, and courageous conversations about the rights and opportunities for women in public political life. We need to look and examine the rights of women, the access to which they have, opportunities, the living and learning conditions that they have. And today, we hope to make a significant step in this direction by having Dr. Amalia Gonias-Malka, who will share her insights in the journey to equality, women's rights, or human rights. Dr. Amalia Gonias-Malka holds a PhD in marketing management, specializing in digital platforms. She also has 3 postdoctorates in business and communication management and is currently completing her 2nd PhD on platform-based businesses and customer experience in e-commerce through artificial intelligence at the University of Pretoria. During her career, Dr. Amalia Gonias-Malka has worked with major local financial institutions as well as international consumer goods and pharmaceutical companies. Some of her roles include executive positions in the banking sector and media industry. She's an appointed board member, has served on government advisory committees, and CEO of AP Management Consultancy.
With that said, I will start with today's presentation. So, hello, everybody. As we kick off, 51% of people in South Africa are female. So women represent the majority of the population. However, equal representation doesn't necessarily translate to equality. Today, I'm going to be talking about the journey to equality because that's what it is. And we will do a whistle stop of what women have gained in terms of rights and opportunities, talk about some of the current gaps that are in place, and more importantly, what we can all do, each in our individual capacities and as a collective, to progress gender equality and ultimately seek forward those freedoms. And that'll be the trend of the conversation for the next 30 minutes. Whilst Dr. Naidu had given some aspects in terms of my professional background, my educational background, one element which she hadn't included because of the disjointure with the audio is that I produce and present a gender-based radio program called Womanity, Woman in Unity, which I conceptualized about 10 years ago after delivering an academic paper in California at the Academy of Marketing Science Conference, which was called Education, Women Making Their Futures and Changing Our World. And in essence, what that paper asked was, if women have got so much enabling legislation, which we have, where are the women? And it clearly points out that having rights is not enough, that we need action behind that too. And part of the mission of the radio program is really to showcase where women are today. We profile prominent female achievers, from female presidents like former president of Liberia, Ellen Sirleaf Johnson, Amina Gharib Fakim, former president of Mauritius, to the United Nations, Amina J. Mohammed, our very own Dr. Phumzile Mlambo-Nuka, who was former Undersecretary General and Executive Director of UN Women and was the first and only deputy president in South Africa. We also review ambassadors, judges, judge presidents, and SADC members, sportswomen, Boeing 747 pilots. And in today's conversation, you'll hear some of their voices echoed through me. What they've all made me realize is that unfortunately, equality is a journey and one which we cannot be complacent about any of the gains which we've acquired. And whilst we've had action which has come through the past and it paves the ways for the future, if you do not persist, those gains can quite easily be undone. And every era will have different problems or issues to solve. The past may have been about political freedom, but today in the present, it's certainly gender-based violence and attaining economic freedom. Dr. Naidu spoke about Malala Yousafzai and the assassination attempt on a 15-year-old girl who was advocating for the rights of women, for the rights of education amongst her peers. And that was an attempt from the Taliban. If you think about women today in Afghanistan, since the Taliban have taken over from 2021, so just 2 years' time, women's rights have taken a significant backseat. Women are losing access to education, to employment, to public spaces, as well as other basic freedoms. And that is obviously incredibly detrimental. But because of that, that's why I emphasize that equality is very much a journey. And if we do not put our efforts in place and consistently follow through, those things will quite easily be lost. So let's start off with the gains segment of the conversation. In 1995, one of the, you would have seen on the poster that there was a quote by Hillary Rodham Clinton, which is, women's rights are human rights. So back in 1995, there was the Beijing Declaration and Platform for Action, which had a very comprehensive agenda focusing on gender equality and women's empowerment. It tackled global issues, which we still see pervading today, nearly 30 years on, which impact on women, from poverty to environment to violence against women to girls' education to having equal representation of women in the labor market, especially in high-skilled positions, to politics and senior management, and also looking at the distribution of paid labor and domestic responsibilities. One of the other things that they focused on was mechanisms of trying to get women into the workforce or women into the political sphere. And what they did was introduce targets. And one of the core targets was about allocating 30% of positions to women. And whilst that was a very good trigger and driver to move things through, one has to consider that if we set targets like that, it almost legitimizes that 70% of roles are allocated towards men. And if we think about this in another context, where we've got 51% of women outnumbering men at 49% as a ratio, that it means that there are more women competing for fewer positions. So 51% of the population competing for 30% of positions versus 49% of the population competing for 70% of roles. Thankfully, one of the things that Dr. Naidu mentioned was the fact that we have rules, the fact that we have rights in place, that these are enforced by government, these are enforced through business and civil society actions. In South Africa, as a patriarchal society, women were really treated as second-class citizens, either under the guardianship of their fathers or when they got married under the custodianship of their husbands. And many women still grapple with dealing with these socio-cultural pervasive elements in society. But through the passing of various laws, cementing the Bill of Rights in the Constitution, it means that we do have these rights that are available to us. There was a time when you look at the slide that we couldn't vote. We couldn't own property. We couldn't work in environments we wanted to work in, that if we were trying to secure a directorship position, we would need the permission of our husband or our father. that we didn't have access to education, that the education forums were stereotyped into what we could do. And if I cast my mind back to just a couple of weeks ago on two significant professors who've really made strong accolades in their academic fields, both of them mentioned that when they were at university, they were almost subjugated to this view of, well, you're here at university simply to find a husband, not that they were there at university in their own right to excel and become the woman that they are today. We still have unfair discrimination when it comes to wages. On average, women are underpaid 23% less than their male counterparts in a given position. The other core area was rights to our own bodies and health. And if I reflect, for instance, not too long ago, the ambassadors of Senegal and both Kenya said that previously women couldn't confer citizenship rights to their children, children that they gave birth to. It had to be done through the nationality of their father. Another core element, if we think of the way that women were penalized, I know that in KZN, Margaret Hirsch, Hirsch's Home Stores conceptualizer, founder, who has subsequently won Businesswoman of the Year, she was fired for being pregnant. Can you imagine that, being fired from your position simply for being pregnant? Other women that we've interviewed, when they reflected on some of their roles of their mothers working in public service, that when their mother was decided to get married, she had to give up her position to a man so that he could become the breadwinner for somebody else. So we've had to address all of these discrimination points in society. And certainly whilst gains have been made, there are certainly some glaring gaps. And we'll go into some of those gaps now. And we've spoken about the laws that have been placed, because absolutely we have to talk about what the gains have been made. We've spoken about education, that there are certainly more girls in schools, that maternal mortality has reduced. Now looking at some of the aspects on the slide, and I'll work through those systematically, but we won't cover all of these points. We'll just focus on some of the key ones. From a political point of view, around the world, women only hold 25% of seats in national parliament. Why is having a role in politics significant? Well, for several reasons. One, women occupying positions of government and serving as heads of state shows and demonstrates the empowerment of women in government. It shows that women in these roles are role models for other women. But I would say the most important fact is that it is the power and the capacity that they have to drive change, whether that is through political reform or other roles. From a South African point of view, we rank 11th in the world in terms of female representation in parliament, sitting at 46%. Before 1994, that figure was less than 3%. And part of the attribution that we have for making those significant gains is through, let's say, political parties that have gender policies, like the ANC, which was adamant in its 50-50 men, 50% representation by women, 50% representation by men. By having gender quotas in place and having policies, these serves as drivers to push women through. The next element is poverty. So globally, 25% of women between the ages of 25 to 34 are more likely than men to live in conditions of extreme inequality. And factors that contribute to that include aspects of access to education, the type of home environment, gendered expected norms, limited by thinking and thinking in a bit of a myopic view that the life out there is not for me. And there have been many women that we've interviewed from a local point of view, and names that come to mind are Prof. Deborah Mayer, who is, I think she's the executive leader for science at the University of Johannesburg now. And she came from a family, very impoverished family, 10 siblings, and her parents succeeded in ensuring that all their children attained a tertiary education. To Dr. Shirley Zinn, who sits on a number of different boards at corporate level, similar scenario. went on winning scholarships, bursaries, attending Harvard. So breaking out of poverty is so incredibly important. Another issue that I want to mention is about unpaid care and domestic work. Globally, around the world, women take on more unpaid labor than their male counterparts. And that labor is essential, really, cleaning the house, cooking for the family. But what that means is, we see these figures here, 4.1 hours versus 1.7 hours a day. It means that women have got less time to participate in the labor market, or they're forced to work for longer hours in order to incorporate these dynamics of the unpaid work and paid work. And in many instances, it's called the second shift. One area that I'd like to touch on before we move on to the next set of slides is the issue of underpayment. So I mentioned that from a South African point of view, on average, women are paid 23% less than their male counterparts. Globally, this figure is around about 16% less than men. If I were to put an out of office on my emails to have the equivalent working conditions, at 23% less of my salary, I would be out of office at the end of the year in September, because literally I'm paid 3 months less than what my male counterparts are paid for. So think about some of these dynamics as core gaps. And the World Economic Forum annually prepares a report on the global gender gap, which goes across four dimensions. One is on economic participation and opportunity. The second is on educational attainment. The third is on health and survival. And the fourth is on political empowerment. If I can ask you to go into the chat, if you have access at this point, pop in what you think, how many years it'll take to close all of these gender gaps and for us to attain gender equality on a global level. So in the next 10 seconds or so, pop in your estimates, your guesses, and in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, this is the figure. 132 years. That is the time that it's going to take to close the gender equality gap. I don't know about you, but I don't think I'm going to be around in 132 years to see that. And I don't think that we should have to be waiting this length of time to close off on these gaps. So who's doing well? Well, in the top 10, we have the Nordic countries, Iceland, Finland, Norway, followed through by New Zealand, back to Nordics, Sweden, Africa with Rwanda in 6th, Nicaragua, Namibia in 8th, Ireland 9th, Germany 10th. One of the things that many of these countries have in common is the high propensity of female leadership, particularly in the Nordics. Rwanda always has got high volumes. In fact, they lead in terms of the IPU. They've got 64% representation of women. And Namibia also has a high concentration of very strong women within their governments. And lastly on the list, Germany, with the former vice chancellor of Angela Merkel. For interest's sake, South Africa's currently ranked 20th. But let's look at some of these lessons from the Nordic countries. So first lesson is that on average, more women are in work than around the rest of the world. So 74% of women in Nordic countries have jobs. Again, another little bit of a sidebar. On average, 80% of the female population in South Africa who are working are in underpaid positions. The second core element is that equal pay for equal work is a legal right, and companies enforce this. The third element is that the Nordic countries consider it a priority to achieve gender equality across the labor market. So not just about part-time or full-time work. And another point which I want to emphasize here, and if we talk about this as a dynamic of creating cultural and social change, is that in the Nordic region, Both parents are entitled to take parental leave. And because of this, it means that responsibilities of child rearing do not just fall into the domain of women, but they fall into that collectiveness of a family unit where both partners take responsibility for their children. If you see here, on average, parents have a right to 345 days of parental leave. When I spoke about the high propensity of female leadership, I think that another glaring example is the way that the corona crisis was handled with countries of New Zealand, Finland, Germany, and Taiwan in terms of their responses. And they were all led by women at the time, those particular countries. And their accreditation here was bringing in characteristics like collaboration, transparency, empathy, and delegation, all characteristics that these women brought into their leadership to create a safe base, which helped them lead their countries rather successfully through the corona crisis. So we've spoken about some of the gains, we've spoken about some of the gaps. So let's get on to the grind dynamic. That for me is one of the most important pieces and where we'll spend the bulk of today's presentation. So drawing on some of the women who have been on the radio show and looking at them from a leadership point of view, I'd like to share some of the insights that they've shared, because it's been a privilege to take these learnings that women have combined with us. So first up is Dr. Phumzile Mlambo-Nuku, when she served as the United Nations Under Secretary General and as Executive Director of UN Women. And as I mentioned, she is the first woman to ever have served as the Deputy President in the history of South Africa. So a few of the things that she brought to mind for those who are on the radio, I'll just read through this quotation. "You know, for me, I think apartheid taught me something. When we fought apartheid, it wasn't just us black people, just by ourselves. The struggle was inclusive. And part of being able to make the anti-apartheid struggle so global had to do with bringing everybody and allowing people to be active in their own rights in the spaces that we're in. So I'm literally using the anti-apartheid playbook and trying now to apply it in the fight against gender equality." And a few of the things that she's been able to introduce, well, one very, very important aspect is in connection with the UN Sustainable Development Goals. There are 17 goals, and one of them is SDG number 5, gender equality. And SDG number 5 really speaks to the fact that women and girls everywhere must have equal rights and opportunities and to be able to live free of violence and discrimination. And if this SDG is affected, it is so integral to all of the other 16 dimensions. There's massive dependencies. She also spoke about political will and the emphasized leadership and the power of, when you're in leadership, the ability that you have to have access to resources and to be able to affect and drive change, whether it's policies, whether it is in the types of people that you recruit, or where those resources are being distributed. Besides SDG number 5, she has been able to construct several campaigns within the United Nations. So one of those, for example, is the He for She campaign. It's a platform to enable men to come out as feminists and feel good about it, that they're playing this active role in this movement for gender equality. And she says it's exciting because they came up with new ideas because they were looking at gender equality through their lens and what they could do to contribute. So bringing in her anti-apartheid playbook and having this inclusive approach, she said it wasn't just about empowering girls. It was about boys thinking about their social relations, their relations with women and girls, and how they also could become role models. And I'll just touch on one more campaign that she introduced, and that was called 10 by 10 by 10. And effectively, they worked with various heads of state. They encouraged them to choose a particular issue that was crucial for their country and take responsibility for driving it. So in Iceland at the time, it was about going through with equal pay. In Malawi, it was focusing on child marriage. In Indonesia, it was focusing on trafficking. And in Japan, focusing on the economic empowerment of women. The next lady I'll talk about is Dr. Rina Kionka, and she was the European Union ambassador to South Africa. So in terms of the quote that she mentioned that I took out, she said, if there is no expectation that parity should be the norm, then it's not going to happen. And what she was emphasizing here is that we really have to be adamant about driving through an agendas that we are supporting the direction of those agendas and their fulfillment. And she, in many instances, was the first woman to have achieved many of her goals. And what she said was, you may be the first, but if you are the first, you have got this tremendous responsibility to bring on board other women, because you can't be first and last. You've got to bring other women through the pipelines. And given the nature of her job, she attends a lot of conferences across the globe. And she said something that she did every time she went to an event, and you'd have the picture set up and everyone would take a photograph, and she'd have the photograph representing. And she said 99 times out of 10, it would just be the sea of men in black and gray suits. And every now and then you'd see a pop of woman. And she would simply entitle it gender scorecard, because there were sometimes countries that showed up with not even a single woman in their delegation. Another learning that I took out from the conversation with her is one of deprioritization. So we all have an arm length of to-do lists, but we have to be very conscious about the choices that we make as individuals and how those choices are going to impact on our progression through our careers. That not everything is important, and we have to be tough and consider about those choices that we make. The second and third elements that she really focused on is about gender diversity and combining that with selection panels. So invariably, when key appointments are going to be made in an institution, there will be a selection panel. If you do not have women on that selection panel, the chances are that a woman will not be chosen for the job. So think about the panels that are going around and who is represented in those panels, because that has an impact on the type of individuals that are hired and the chance of appointing a woman in those roles. The third woman that I'm going to speak about is Geeta Kamith, who was the High Commissioner of Australia to South Africa. And reading the quote for you, she said, I think to become a leader, you have to see yourself as a leader, and you have to be seen by others as a leader. And I think this is where you have these unconscious biases that contribute and create barriers for women. And I think to see yourself as a leader involves a fundamental shift in identity. So if you don't put on the cap of leadership, if you don't show up as a leader, if you don't change your mindset, that impacts on your ability. The reason that I've chosen High Commissioner Geeta Kamath is twofold, apart from her abilities and capabilities as a leader. It's her backstory. So she was born in India. She spent her first 7 years of life in Malaysia. And she attributes her success to her education, her immigration to Australia, and the power of her mother and grandmother. So casting back, her grandmother was married at the age of 13 years old to an old man. She had seven children, six of who were girls, and she was widowed at a very young age. She was told by her father to come back to the family home in India, and that the only thing that she could do was to marry off these children, because she was so young and had so many girls and didn't know what to do with them. She refused. She left the family home, and she succeeded in bringing up all her daughters to become doctors. So all her kids became doctors, and I just thought it was such an amazing success story of one woman and how that has impacted on the life of her daughter and then the life of her, her granddaughter. So back to Geeta Kamath and some of the aspects in Australia. So she, like we spoke about the 30% equation and having that target, that if you don't have some kind of target in place, that things will never move, policies will never change. The other thing that she mentioned, and this echoes aspects of what Dr. Phumzile Mlambo-Ngcuka said, is about empowering men and encouraging men to take change action. So Elizabeth Broderick was the former Australian Sex Discrimination Commissioner, and she founded an initiative called Male Champions of Change. And the Male Champions of Change started round about 2010, and it's a coalition of Australian CEOs, male CEOs, who are there to support women, to help them step up, to advance into leadership positions, to give them sponsorship. And one of the initiatives that Male Champions of Change orchestrated is something called the Panel Pledge. And the panel pledge is if they, for instance, are invited to speak at an event, what they look at is what is the gender representation of all of the panelists on that event. And if they don't feel that there's enough female representation, they will give up their seat. They will source a woman and nominate that woman to participate. And by doing this, it really helps shift the gender balance or imbalance in the way that women are perceived. I think one of the important points that I'm stating here is that, echoing Margaret Thatcher's words, you may have to fight a battle more than once to win it. What are some of the aspects from a South African point of view? Well, if we look at things from an education point of view, 65% of our tertiary graduates are women. We have got strong, visible leadership, particularly in politics. If we look towards our court system, the current Deputy Chief Justice, Mandisa Maya, was also the Supreme Court Justice. We have female judge presidents. We have leadership in some of our academic institutions, particularly UCT, which has been very strong. So continuing with our grind aspect, and this for me is encouraging you to look across four areas where you're able to create an impact personally. So the first is from a cultural point of view. Culture is dynamic. It's fluid. We can change culture. If things are not working the way you want them to work, we can change it. Take, for example, parental leave. Unfortunately, male parental leave is paternity leave is still ridiculous. In the past, it was just limited to 3 days. Now it's expanded to 10. If we look at Sweden, as an example, they have paid parental leave of up to 480 days shared across parents. And when you've got this type of dynamic, it really demonstrates that taking care of children is a joint responsibility, and it shows that it's not just the domain of women. The next element is the power of knowledge. Through education, you have this capability of learning, of being able to be more informed of what is right? What is wrong? Being able to advance yourself and not impose limits on others. And in taking on that learning and knowledge, it means that we've got new opportunities. And I'll reflect a slight digression here. There's a wonderful talk on TED Talks by Susan Colanciano, an Italian woman, Italian-American, who argues that women have not been given the right type of advice for advancing their careers. And by not having the right type of advice, it knocks off a third of their opportunity for gaining career growth. And those three elements consist of business, strategic, and financial acumen. If we are not understanding the direction of the business, learning its strategy, what its financial targets are, then we're not able to contribute meaningfully to its growth. So those are 3 points, just as general knowledge. But power is ultimately knowledge. Related to that is that when you are offered opportunities, don't just sit at the table. Make the table. Empower yourself. And take risks. Put your hand up. crack out of your comfort zone and learn the rules of the game. Every entity, organization, institution that you are part of has its own set of rules. Play by those rules. Learn and use them to your advantage. And again, reflecting on women, Dr. Judy Domini, who Chancellor of WITS, fantastic businesswoman, she wrote a wonderful publication based on her thesis called Equal But Different. And she really demonstrates this participation aspect and the fact about bringing other women in. And being part of these networks, your associations, your societies. And when you're talking about bringing other women up, one of my favorite quotes from Madeleine Albright was, there's a special place in hell for women who don't help other women. And I stand by that. The last one is own your rights. They are yours. We have them, use them, display them in your workplaces. I guarantee you that not everyone knows what their rights are. And through our rights, through our laws, we've been able to change things. And thinking to relatively recent history, Judge Poyo Dorati, for instance, demonstrated that by being able to change rights for women, being able to deal with the vendor chieftaincy, made it possible for women to be appointed chiefs. Recently, very recently, in fact, 2022, there's now been the recognition of spouses in Muslim marriages. In the past, Muslim marriages weren't classified correctly in terms of our constitution. So women weren't conferred rights. All of these elements, they don't happen in silos. They're happening all the time. And as multidimensional beings, we have to be on board with all of these elements. So from my perspective, I would say I owe the women that have come before me for the rights and privileges that I enjoy today and can take for granted. I can vote. I can work. I can have my education. But if we don't continue to pursue the gender equality agenda, gains will be lost. Gaps will grow. And this isn't somebody else's responsibility. This is our responsibility. So if I'm about putting my money where my mouth is, what am I doing for gender equality? I would say that creating the Womanity platform as a vehicle, as a proof point to demonstrate the potential in women, that we can do anything that we want. So as we close out today, equality is not a female fight. And in the words of Hillel the Elder, if not now, when? If not you, who? Let's be honest. Can you wait 132 years to close gender equality gaps? Can your children? So I ask you, what are you going to do to close your gender equality gaps? Be it for yourself, be it for your mother, be it for your sister, your peers, or your children. Thank you very much.
This is an MUT Radio podcast.